We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man Andres Hale. We're having three shows this week, pro wrestling, MMA, and boxing. So plenty of content for you guys. It's very fun being able to break this into three different shows. It allows us to talk about everything in depth, and it keeps stuff under 2 hours for you guys. So hopefully you guys enjoy all three shows this week. We have a blast talking about all of it. On this show, it's all about MMA. So we're going to recap UFC 254 with Khabib and Justin Gaethje. We're going to talk about what happens to lightweight division. We're going to talk about, you know, just the overall aspect of who's the greatest fighter in MMA history now. Where do people stack up? Does anything change after the events that happened this weekend? But first, we have to kick it off by talking hip-hop. It's been a second, but we're back on the hip-hop train. And today it's thanks to Versus, because Versus is back. And Dre, we got our next matchup, Jeezy versus T.I. T.I.'s been calling people out for a second. I think this is the perfect matchup for him.
I don't care.
What?
I don't care about this battle.
That's disrespectful.
I'm sorry, I just
college, don't. College, you would be irate.
No, college me would be
in
like...
In Atlanta?
Oh, yeah. College me.
You were snobby in Atlanta?
Yes. I've been a music snob my whole life. Oh, I've never been a huge Jeezy fan. Thug Motivation was great for what it was. T.I. Yeah. I'm just being honest.
Okay.
This is not a battle that I'm like, yeah, I can't wait for this battle to happen. I told you, my problem with this particular battle is both of them are still kind of active. And I think T.I. Yeah. wins. So... I don't necessarily like T.I. has got a very strange catalog to me because it's good, but is it great?
Yeah. I mean, for Southern rappers, before the Ludacris battle on Versus, I would say T.I.'s catalog was stronger than Luda's.
That's fair.
Then Luda surprised me a lot with a lot of the features, he just murked.
Yeah, so like Ludacris rap.
Yeah, so that was different. But I would say T.I.'s is stronger than Luda's. So what are we talking? Outside of the really good in-depth lyrical groups, down south, specifically Atlanta, but down south in general, from the 90s, right? Outside of Ghetto Boys, you have Outkast, of course, the entire Dungeon family. You have all of these groups that really push needle. I even like 3-6 Mafia from back then, all this shit, Cash Money. You have those groups from the 90s that were real rappity-ass rappers from down south. 2000s weren't about that. No. We started seeing Dope Boy, you know, trap music. A lot of these trappers getting into it. And I think out of those guys, T.I. is probably the best.
I mean, listen, man. This battle is this is another one of those battles where T.I. is not going to play the songs that I like. He'll play Let's Get Away. He'll play, he should play Rubber Band Man, because Rubber Band Man should always be played out of T.I.'s catalog.
Of course.
He's
not going to play Over and Over Again. Like, he's against Jeezy. Or is that a Nelly song? I don't know.
Nelly song.
T.I. had, one of those stupid songs, too.
I mean, he had a song with Justin Timberlake. He had,
That one's okay, but T.I. had, a real soppy song. Yeah, regardless.
This isn't a battle where I'm going to make sure I'm home to tune in. If I miss it, I miss it.
That's
I'm
so
totally
weird.
Fine with that.
You were glued in front of the TV for the old school battle.
Yes, because they're old school battles.
This is a patty battle, old school R&B, soul music.
Yes, but Jeezy, I've never been high on Jeezy's catalog. Not as much as other people. Never.
I don't know if he got 20 songs. Jeezy got bangers. I don't know if he got 20.
Jeezy got Go Crazy, which I think is nuts. Don Cannon murdered that beat. But for the most part, I'm not a huge Jeezy guy. So this battle does nothing for me. They play some Boys in the Hood stuff?
Got some shit. Yeah, Boys in the Hood. Boys in the Hood got one.
But it's 20 songs? Jeezy? 20 songs?
Listen, Jeezy got put on. Soul Survivor. A lot of shit's from the first album. I'm trying to find. Lose My Mind was my shit. My Mind was crazy. But T.I. got shit for it. Super Freak was the joint with Change. Crazy. I Love It. And then what? Jeezy got 20.
Yeah.
I Do with Jay-Z and Dre.
I'll pass. And look.
The President Was Black.
Cool. But again, I'm not. The people that like Jeezy, cool. I'm just not one of them.
I think it was Twitter, since 2012, the Officially Ice dude, his favorite rapper ever is Jeezy. And he'll die on that hill. I don't get it.
I'll kill you on that hill.
I don't get it. T.I. though, T.I. strong. The only way T.I. loses is if he starts picking some obscure shit, which when you put him against another trap rapper, I don't think he has to do that.
No. It's just, I don't know, man. I like Tip. I think he's had a very respectable career. But in a battle, no. And then, this in a weird way, not necessarily because it's what I wanted to see, but I didn't want to see Tip versus Busta Rhymes. Busta would have ran him off the fucking fence. That'd have been rough.
Busta got way too much shit, though. But these young kids don't even know about Busta shit. Leader of the new school, Busta? You got Scenario. You got there's way too much crazy shit in Busta's catalog.
Yeah, all the Tip stuff that I like, I'm not gonna say he's not gonna play it. But you go all the way back to trap music and Urban Legend, there's a lot of stuff that I actually liked on there. You Don't Know Me, of course. He's gotta play You Don't Know Me. He's got to play Rubber Band Man, like I said. What was the song that Kanye produced? Oh, why can't I think?
Back in the day, I'll find it for you, but not. He got mad shit. Again, you just can't fuck it up.
Was it Doing My Job? Was that the one Kanye produced?
Oh, no. I can't remember. Doesn't ring the bell.
But for me,
I look at these albums.
I think T.I. watches Jeezy in this battle, and I'm not all that intrigued to watch it. So. there.
I mean, Urban Legend got hits. Bring Him Out, which has to be a banger for him.
Yeah.
These albums were long. The Greatest, when Manny was always my shit. Trap Music got joints. 24s. I'll do 24s.
Dude, I like Tip. I just don't necessarily care about a battle.
Rubber Band Man. Yeah. That's so weird. I think they had worse matchups than Tip versus Jeezy. I think this is even. I think it's going to get a good crowd. People are going to be hype. It's not going to be lackluster energy. I don't think they sit there the whole night like Rick Ross did against 2 Chainz. Like, the only thing he did was get a massage and shit. So I think this is a better battle than that. And I think that when it comes to bangers, you'll be like, oh, this joint is dope. Like, especially with Jeezy. He's going to pull out some shit. It's like, oh, that's fire.
Nothing Jeezy will play, I'll be like, oh, it won't. I've never been moved by Jeezy. People swear by Jeezy. He's not my cup of tea. I get why other people like him. I will not call Jeezy whack. I just don't listen to Jeezy like that.
By the way, I think Jeezy's career is over. So safe to say he could be in the Versus. T.I. might have another hit too, maybe in his back pocket. Maybe. Jeezy's pretty much a wrap. So, since you just said you're not a big fan of Jeezy, this is a tough question for you, but I need to know your answer. I'll limit it down to 3. Who are your top 3 drug dealing rappers ever?
Not Jeezy.
Not Jeezy.
Mm-mm.
I go top 3. I had it at 5 because it's always hard for me to choose. Me, Pusha T is in my top 3.
Yeah.
All time.
Pusha is absolutely in the top 3. Pusha, even if he don't sell 3. That shit anymore.
Yeah, I don't go far. Like, you can talk about that forever. But I said 5 because Jay is definitely in my top 5.
Yes.
When Jay wants to get on his drug shit. Push. Give me Cam. I love when Cam gets greasy on some drug shit. Cam just crushes shit. Even though I guess Santana too. Mostly Santana. Human Crack in the Flesh, all that shit was dope. So I'll just put Dipset because I'm cheating. Those are 3. Give me Jeezy because you got to have the snowman in there. Talking about dealing. Like, it's drugs. That's what Jeezy does. And then I'm trying to figure out my last one because on some real drug shit, I feel like people were real greasy back in the 90s. I'm finding it hard to like really ping it on some like, yo, I'm selling drug shit. Mod Deep had some joints.
Dude. Ghostface had drug dealing shit.
Ghost did have mad drug dealing shit. But he was, yeah. Ooh. It's hard to keep Ghost out of that. But see, you're going like real intellectual, rappy rap as drug dealers.
See, if
and
you
I
want
filled that quota with Jay.
Yeah. Well, see, here's my issue. Like, there's great drug dealing rappers like Pusha T. I don't believe Rick Ross, so I kind of eliminate him. But then there's really great drug dealing songs, right? Like, they're. 10 Crack Commandments is probably the best drug dealing song ever.
True. Very true.
And with Jay.
It's hard to out rap Big with drug dealing too. Yeah. So it's, they gotta be in the fight.
It's incredibly difficult. But then there's songs like NWA's Dope Man, which is a classic. Jay-Z on Drug Dealers Anonymous with Pusha T. It's the only time that I've heard Pusha on a drug dealing song where he gets absolutely murked by somebody else.
Yeah. Jay went crazy on that though.
Dude. Oh, like that's when we talk about drug dealing songs. Then another one, UGK's Pocket Full of Stones. You got to go all the way back to
UGK was close. Well, specifically Pimp C was close to being my top 5. I was going to say Pimp C and then there's a lot of 3-6 Mafia songs, but they talk a lot about doing a lot of drugs as well. And I'm trying to keep drug doers off of this list.
You know what else is a hard ass drug dealing song? What We Do, Freeway.
Oh, yeah. I just heard that beat, like, earlier today. It's crazy that you mentioned that.
Dude.
Someone's freestyle off of that.
I'm sorry. We're not talking about drug dealing rap anymore right now. Every time I hear that song, I go, y'all don't talk about Just Blaze enough. Y'all really
That's
don't.
That's always your case with Just Blaze.
Jesus.
Blaze got hits from, I mean, that was a strong, what, 12-year run?
I'm just saying that What We Do beat will never get old.
Ever. I heard someone freestyled over it. They murdered it, but I was just like,
dog,
that beat is incredible.
There's no hook in that song. They're just going
the whole time. Freeway's flow, by the way. Like, no one's copied that flow.
No, you can't.
It's one of those things you can't even, like, duplicate. Yeah, you can't duplicate that shit at all. Freeweezy's good. There's a lot of good just straight drug dealing rappers. I mean, Jada could be on my top five, given how I'm feeling. Jada could bump Cam. You know, they got to bring the scale that they weigh the whales with. Yeah, what?
It's pretty. I mean, again, Jada every now and then says something that you visualize and you go, yeah.
That's yeah, that shit, like that's real drug dealing talk. That's greasy. Yeah, Jada might be in the top five. But I feel like these down south rappers had their like thumb on the game. You wouldn't see, but you're intellectual. So, because some people will come to me and they'll be like, yo, you got to put, I don't fucking know, like OJ the Juice Man on it. Or,
yeah. No, they'll say Boosie. Master P. They'll say Master P immediately.
Master P.
Ghetto
D. You got to do Boosie. Mm-hmm. Boosie no. be on some shit. You got to put in, what's his face before he came back as a clone? Ice cream on the face.
Who, Gucci?
What is it? Gucci.
Oh, yeah, people love Gucci, but no.
You got to put in Gucci as drug dealing rap. All right, I mean, I'm not fucking with Gucci. I'm not a Gucci fan. None of this
Ten Crack Commandments is the epitome of the rapping ass rapping drug dealer song. It's over a Primo beat.
It is. Yeah, no, I guess no better than that. That's the creme de la creme. That and maybe... I don't know. I got to listen back, but Something on Reasonable Doubt probably is on the creme de la creme.
I mean, it's Friend or Foe, obviously.
Oh, Friend or Foe, which is, yeah, fucking nuts. State your biz. Yeah, it's
you know, you know what's weird? I'm going to change gears real quick, and we'll make this really brief, and then we'll move on to MMA. So Questlove started this shit on Twitter, and I don't know if people saw it. They were talking about what album did you bump from 96, and it was Only Built for Cuban Links and Reasonable Doubt. And I watched people slander Reasonable Doubt, right?
What?
Because obviously Cuban Links is a classic, right? It's obvious. Right. Like, it's an absolute classic album. But there was like nobody was really bumping because, you know, Big was still around and Jay really didn't get his feet wet. Like, he was still kind of new. And my boy Frank was like, who's really bumping Cashmere Thoughts? I was. Listen.
Love Cashmere Thoughts.
I was, and I have friends that will attest to this. I bought, you know, the $4 single. Your single's 99 cents, mine was $4. I bought that $4 single. I bought Reasonable Doubt the day that it dropped, and I played it for everybody. I've said this on the podcast before. Those of you who are new to the show, I promoted a Jay-Z show in Las Vegas when in 1996, when I was still in high school. My youth group brought Jay-Z out here because of me, because I could not stop playing Jay-Z. So when people talk about Reasonable Doubt, I was like, oh, Cuban Links crushes it. I get what you're saying, because Cuban Links was incredible. But Reasonable Doubt, I played that shit for anybody who would listen. The first time I heard Dead Presidents, I lost my mind. But Brooklyn's Finest with Big?
Oh, incredible back and forth.
Can't Knock the Hustle? Politics as Usual is still one of my favorite Jay-Z songs.
It's better than Only Built for Cuban Links.
I mean, there's
going
to be people.
And I respect it. You know,
Justin Ivey's going to kill you. Like,
he is going to kill me.
Wu-Tang fans, they're going to kill you.
It is better. There's, what, 4 albums maybe in hip-hop better than Reasonable Doubt. It's in my top 5 ever. And I could be objective with that list, and it's still in the top 5. Only Built for Cuban Links is not better than that album.
I mean, I love Reasonable. Cashmere
Thoughts was my shit. Like, I almost asked you about that, because, like, drug dealer rap is, like, one thing.
Yeah.
But there's, like, this whole genre of like pimping rap, which I love as well. Like, talking about like UGK and shit. Like, when you talk about pimping in your raps, like, people, it's just so stylish. I don't know why. And then when I came to Vegas, I was like, yo, there's real pimps. I was like enamored. Cause that shit like was kind of foreign on the East Coast. But Jay was the first East Coast rapper to talk about pimping.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, he does it so well. And then I get to the West Coast, and then, you know, I listen to shit like Too Short. Original Ice-T records.
Yeah. No.
You know.
Look.
E-40.
I personally, it's hard for me to say that Reasonable Doubt is better than Cuban Links in the grand scheme of things. But personally, I've enjoyed Reasonable Doubt more. I play it now more than I play Cuban Links, but I've always been that way. And people are going to say I've lost my mind, but I love Cuban, Only Built for Cuban Links. I love Criminology. I love all that shit. Rebel Inn, of course, one of the greatest songs ever. I love it. But like, I will turn on Reasonable Doubt and I'll get to Can't Knock the Hustle, Dead Presidents, Brooklyn's Finest, Politics as Usual.
22s?
Yeah, and I'm just like, people that poo-poo on this album was like, it wasn't that good. You're nuts. The thing is, I think for a lot of people, they missed the bus on Jay-Z until the second album. And the third album, Truly, is when he really got on. But I was on board with Jay-Z from day one. I was not late to the party.
My favorite track on that album is The Evils.
I love The Evils too. Politics as Usual is all in my shit. That stylistic sample is incredible to me.
Yeah, like, oh my God, that album's like almost perfection. Like, I don't know how anyone can shit on that album. I'd be remiss if I'm talking pimpin' rap and I don't mention my boy Sugar Free.
Well, Sugar Free is the greatest pimp that's ever lived on music. Undoubtedly.
To this day, once every like 2 months, I listen to Sugar Free. And I just get in a whole different mindset. Just for like 10 minutes. That shit is hilarious. Sugar Free, man. That's a great, great way to get off track. So I'm here from Justin Ivey. I'm here for other people on Twitter. So we will end on that hot take. Reasonable Doubt is better than Only Built for Cuban Links. Deal with it. Embrace it. Fuego take. We're going to the break. When we come back, we got to talk MMA. We'll let you guys simmer for a second. Stay right there. We'll be right back. All right, we'll get back to the show in 1 second. But first, even though sports had a break, your business did it. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools for you to make your search that much easier. Those tools include sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire that you need. Just like they have for over 3 million businesses.
Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
All right, we are back, and it's time to talk MMA. UFC 254 specifically. The way we're going to do this is we're going to talk about the nuts and bolts of the card, go through some of the fights, talk about the aspects of the fights, the nuts and bolts of those, and then we'll do kind of the broad aspect of the fallout, what happens next in our last segment. So, Dre, let's start. I'm going to start. Lauren Murphy goes in. She was supposed to fight Cynthia Calvillo. In this spot, true number one contenders match. Calvillo, I believe, caught the Rona, had to back out. So we get Lauren Murphy versus Shakarova.
Fez from That 70s Show?
And it was bad right out the gate. Lauren Murphy dominated like she should have and then called for the title shot. Great performance. I don't think she should get the title shot next. I think Cynthia should still get that fight, and Shevchenko just got to chill, because to me, this didn't prove anything.
Well, Shevchenko's fighting Jennifer Maia, who she's going to murder next month.
Yeah, I mean,
anyway.
After that. Yeah, correct.
So what needs to happen, Lauren Murphy didn't come. She came out relatively unscathed. Yeah, rebooked the Calvillo fight, and the winner gets Shevchenko. I mean, actually, no. The winner doesn't get Shevchenko. Jessica Andrade gets Shevchenko next.
Oh, she did look good.
Yeah. So, Lauren Murphy, as much as she talks, should she get the title shot? The only thing that should happen is she should fight Calvillo. That's it. Unless Jessica Andrade feels like, unless Calvillo somehow is not completely recovered from the Rona, Shevchenko's got Maia, and Andrade's like, look, I'll beat your ass because I need to fight before I get my title shot. Then that can happen. But Lauren Murphy doesn't deserve a title shot.
Yeah, this wasn't enough to get it. No. Great dominant performance. This wasn't enough to get it. Next up, we had Phil Hawes versus Malcolm. Phil Hawes, 18 seconds. Great performance. I mean, this is when you're put on a card and they say, yo, you got to show out. Tons of eyes on you. Khabib, one of the top guys. You get put on a pay-per-view card like this. Phil Hawes took full grasp of that and made quick work of Jacob in this fight. I like this. I like what I see from him. Middleweight is stacked, though.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Hawes, any man who names himself after a Transformer is going to be incredible. He calls himself Megatron because he has a cannon on his right arm, and then he just went ahead and utilized that against one of Robert Whittaker's training partners and put him to sleep in 18 seconds. I'd like to see more of him, please. Those are the type of performances we got to see. I love it.
Took no significant strikes.
No, he just went in there and ransacked him.
Ransacked him. 18 seconds, ransacked. So great performance by him. Then we have Alexander Volkov versus Walt Big Ticket Harris. I don't know. It's I feel for Walt. I don't know how he gets back in the mindset of where he was on that run, before the tragedy struck his family and his daughter was kidnapped, and they're still fighting for justice for her. So it's tough, man. Watching him, it just looks like the gas tank's not the same. It's not there. And he has dynamic moves, and he tries to throw a lot of kicks and everything. It just doesn't seem like the tank is there to keep up with that right now.
I mean, I picked with my heart. I wanted Walt to win. But in reality, the only reason I picked against Volkov is I could never get the Derek Lewis knockout out of my head, where he dominated for 2 minutes and, well, 2 rounds and 4 minutes and 50 seconds into the final round, and then he got clipped. And I always think about that. But style-wise, Volkov and his ugly back tattoo, they did the job.
I like that back tattoo. That's good work right there.
It just looks like a Satan mural, a samurai Satan mural. But either way, he looked good. And Walt Harris, he's got to go back to the drawing board. His ground game's not really there. He seems like a guy who is continuing to improve. But when you're 37, it's hard to continue to improve because you're kind of old. So this might be the best we get out of Walt Harris. I don't know if Walt Harris will ever exceed the top 10. I don't know if I don't think he'll ever enter the top 5.
Yeah, no, I know. Again, it's tough at 37, and he was on the run. But, it's tough to remain in that mindset when you have all of that happening outside of the octagon. So I wish him the best. I want to see him continue to fight. It's just, he had his run. I don't know if he cracks the top 5 again. Volkov, on the other hand, now it sets him up for some things.
Yeah,
his call out, Rozenstruik.
Yeah, give it to me.
I think that's the way to go. Yeah, that's a good fight. Now he's like, okay, I fought someone lower than me in the top 10. Now give me someone higher than me. Let's see what we can do. He can start trying to go that way. Because, again, he was being the Black Beast. Until he let his guard down for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes against Derek Lewis.
Very, very talented guy. Uses his height and his range very well. Controls space pretty damn good. Striking is solid. Wrestling defense is good. He's good. Rozenstruik might fuck him up, but I'd like to see him fight.
If John Jones wanted a tune-up at heavyweight before jumping right into a title fight, Volkov would be the perfect guy.
Shit, Volkov's kind of tall for John, but... Yeah, sure.
I mean, he's a good test. Not that it's easy. But, this is, can I do this? he'd be a perfect guy for John to fight. In the co-main, Bobby Knuckles, Robert Whittaker versus Jared Cannonier. 3-round fight. I wish it was 5. Just because I think we could have got a stoppage if it went 5. And it could have went either way. Because in the last like 10 seconds of the fight, Cannonier rocks Whittaker when Whittaker was pretty much dominating the fight before then. So Whittaker, you know, I don't want to say escapes. He wins unanimously. And now in the post-fight, he really doesn't call out Adesanya.
Because he don't really want that fight again.
He's in a rough spot. Because he went and knocked off the next 2 contenders. Yeah. So now what?
I don't know. I picked Cannonier to win this fight because I thought we needed some fresh blood. And I thought Cannonier hits really heavy. Problem with Cannonier is he really fell in love with those leg kicks and never really set up his strikes. And the leg kicks were great if it was a 5-round fight. You slow down Whittaker's mobility. You set him up for the big shot. But in a 3-round fight where Whittaker's really, like, he's not checking the kicks and he's just firing off the jab and you're not really doing anything about it, nothing you could do. But the problem with Whittaker is what I say, he gets rocked every fight. Every fight he gets rocked. Doesn't matter what's happening, he gets rocked. So they're like, hey, you want to fight Adesanya? He's like, yeah, sure. Like, he doesn't really want that fight. Because he knows that Adesanya's going to beat the shit out of him again. So he's in a tough spot. I don't know where else Whittaker goes from here. And the only way he'll ever get his hands on the title is once Adesanya's gone. So he's already fought Romero. He's already fought Jacare. He's already fought Till. He's already fought Cannonier.
He's fought everyone.
Yeah,
but if you lose twice to Adesanya, you're a wrap.
Well, you got to leave the division. Title shot again. You got to leave the division.
Now it's just you got to ask Dana, like, yo, let me just keep cutting my teeth against people.
I mean, honestly, this is gonna sound so crazy to a lot of people. If you were gonna be so disrespectful to Leon Edwards and have him fight Kamaya in his next fight, that Kamaya should fight Robert Whittaker at middleweight.
I agree.
Because that off just aside as an aside, we don't get deep into the weeds on this. They did Leon Edwards dirty,
super dirty.
Because even if he wins, who cares?
That was the biggest bullying tactic ever, and it worked.
Yeah, they were like,
"Yo, we're dropping you from the rankings." By the way, who gives a fuck about the rankings? But Leon obviously did because he called him the next day and was like, "Yo, I'll fight."
That's crazy. Like, Kamaev? Like, that's not fair. He's not even ranked. He has everything to gain. Leon has everything to lose in that fight.
Oh, yeah. And this is not going to be an easy one.
And he's literally in the thick of things. Like, what Leon Edwards should be fighting either Masvidal or Covington if they're not fighting each other. That's where Leon Edwards should be. He should not be fighting somebody who's not ranked. That's crazy. Meanwhile, Robert Whittaker really doesn't have another path because he's fought everybody else. I don't mind seeing him fight Kamaev. If you're going to give Kamaev a top-ranked contender, I don't mind him fighting Whittaker at middleweight. But don't do that to Leon Edwards. He didn't deserve that. It's not his fault that he couldn't fight in the country for a while. That sucks.
It's because of the Rona.
Yeah.
And Dana White doesn't believe in the Rona. So he's like, yo, if you're not fighting, you didn't come to Fight Island, your fault.
That was dumb.
Yep. And Leon could get ransacked.
He could, but he could win. And if he wins, it does nothing for him.
Yeah. I fear that he's going to lose. And this is all for naught because he was an inch away from a title fight.
Yeah, it sucks. It really sucks for him.
Horrible for him. And then main event, Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje. So, going through the fight itself, first round it comes out, Justin Gaethje is keeping a lot of distance between him and Khabib. To the point of, he's less aggressive than we've seen him in other fights, but he's throwing the leg kicks. He's able to keep Khabib standing for most of the first round till the final 30 seconds when Khabib finally lands the takedown. Even then, the striking advantage is in Gaethje's favor. 2 of the judges gave the first round to Justin Gaethje. Only the second round Khabib has lost in his entire career on the cards. The first being the third round to Conor McGregor. So, I was like, Gaethje looked good in the first round. What were your thoughts of the initial game plan and how Gaethje played the first round and how Khabib came out in the first round?
I was really concerned with Khabib playing that game because that's what I said. I was like, if you fight the wrong fight, that's the way that Gaethje can win. And it wasn't that I was mad at him striking with Gaethje early. It was when it was like the middle part of the round, he kept standing up and kept throwing those weird kicks and punches that I was like, man, you're going to get caught. But what, you know, what we tend to forget is like Khabib doesn't lose. So he was willing. This is what he does. He was like, hey, you want to play your game? I play your game. This is fun. We play a game. I'm tired of game. I'm going to beat the shit out of you now. And that's how Khabib fights every fight. And so the first round, I thought it could have went to the ground sooner. But immediately when the fight hit the ground, I remember I was tweeting, but I was thinking, I was like, oh, it's over. Because
Gaethje's in trouble.
Yeah, because as when it hit the ground, because they kept talking about Gaethje's defense on the ground, right? But Khabib's like sliced through all of that so quickly, and it immediately went for an armbar. And I was like, it's over. There's nothing Gaethje can do about this.
Yep.
And he was done. But the game plan, like, look, Khabib, he's a scary guy. And the fact that he chose to stand there with one of the most devastating strikers in all of MMA, regardless of weight class, is a scary thing. And he did it and never really got hurt. He got hit with some shots, ate a few leg kicks, kept coming with that scary pressure. That pressure is scary because you hit him with whatever you have and it doesn't stop him.
No.
It's Michael Myers shit. It's really scary.
I mean, if we're rolling into the second round, you mentioned, you know, what you saw on the ground from Khabib, and that's what made my eyes open immediately, because he didn't do what he usually does, which is ground and pound, make people pay, talk to them. His respect level for Gaethje, or he saw on film something where he was like, oh, this guy can't handle me in jiu-jitsu. And it was, he threw no punches when they got to the ground. It was immediate transition to the armbar.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, the bell saved him. So we get into the second round, and Gaethje hits him with a wicked leg kick, buckles him. And I'm like, oh shit, the leg kicks are finally about to take their toll. Gaethje went to throw another one, and that was it. You mentioned Khabib being able to time those kicks, catch them, put Gaethje down. It was over. He put Gaethje down, immediately went for the triangle, and again, not wasting any time. He was able to actually spin, grab Gaethje's back this time, because Gaethje sprawled nicely, but he sprawled with his back against the cage, got scared, and spun so his head was against the cage, and then Khabib just wrapped his ass up, went for the rear naked, that wasn't there. Gaethje spun out of that right into the triangle curtains.
Look, man, it's what I say about that. It's like, it's hard to throw leg kicks with somebody who has that kind of timing that will eventually figure this out. A lot of guys that have dealt with Gaethje in the past, and I always reference the Palomino fight and World Series of Fighting, if you can't get through that, if you're not willing to step in, because you can't check those kicks. At a certain point, the checking is just going to be just as bad as taking them. So you have to figure out how to get inside. And Khabib just kind of figured it out. He was like, oh, he's getting ready to throw a leg kick. Let me swoop in and take him down, because I already know from the first round, he's not really that hard to take down. And once I get him there, he's in my world. And it's exactly what happened. Smothered him. Finished him. It's like I said on Twitter, he played with fire, he got tired of the fire, and he suffocated the fire. No, people can't do that. And that's what Khabib does. Gets the finish, an emotional finish, retains his title, and then says, you know what? I told my mom I'm done. Can't do this without my dad. I'm out. Peace.
Yeah, so we get to the retirement. We'll save, you know, the grand scheme of where Khabib is for the portion after this break. But with the retirement, it's weird, right? Like, we see people retire all the time in MMA. It's what people do. Conor retired 3 times this past week, probably. People retire all the time. GSP is retired. We saw BJ Penn get his ass whooped by Frankie Edgar to a point we were feeling horrible for him. He came back. Uriah just came back. We see these people come back and fight. Why is Khabib different?
Man, he's a man of principle. And his reason for retiring has nothing to do with I can't fight anymore. I'm tired of this. I made a promise to my mother and my father's gone. That's a man of principle. A man who refuses to fight on Ramadan. Like, a man who is of principle and is a man of his word is far different than somebody who retires off of emotion. And that's what Conor does. And BJ retires because he got his ass kicked. And then he comes back because he still thinks he can beat up somebody. Uriah did the same thing. Most people that retire on the wrong side of their career. or they're tired of the business, or something of that nature. Habib is at the peak of his powers, but his father's gone. And you can tell how much that weighed on him. As soon as that fight ended, he fucking weeped like a baby in the middle of that octagon.
Yeah, that was it. He broke.
This fighting thing is, he's the most popular man in Russia. He's the most followed individual on Instagram in Russia.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And
that's a big fucking country. All
right. He's made a ton of money. There's no reason for him to do this anymore. And that's the key here is he's literally done everything you have to do in that division. The only thing left for him to do is go up another weight class. But without your dad, you make a promise to your mother and you're a man of principle, he's done. It's over.
Yeah, that's a tough one to break. Man, that GSP fight was right there, though.
He killed GSP.
Sure. But I want to see it. Like, that's a lot of money. You can always say, yeah, he has enough. But when is enough?
I
didn't know he was that big a celebrity in Russia. Yeah. So, I mean, fuck it. There's plenty more money to be made there.
Yeah.
You do TV in Russia. Chill.
I think he's, you know, between him, the you know, Dana revealing he broke his foot in training, the injuries that he's dealt with over the years. Clearly, he had a tough weight cut. You know, the way he looked on a scale, like, that whole training part of it, I think he's done with. And when you lose, it's not just your parent, but he's your trainer and your best friend. And that's who you go to war with every time you step into that octagon. You can't really envision yourself doing it without that person. And I really can't see him, you know, being enticed to fight again. Not in a professional capacity. Because there's nothing left to prove.
Before we hit the break, he promised his mom he was done with MMA. MMA is him and his dad's thing, right? He's done with that. Is there a possibility if Floyd Mayweather wants to box him for an exhibition, would he box?
I don't think so.
I think that's a loophole.
I think, when I say I don't think so, I think he's done with MMA. But I think there could be a possibility. I don't know from the psychological aspect of things because who's he going to train with? And I think he wanted to have his dad there for that fight. But that could be a loophole where something different happens. I don't think he'll do it because I don't think, you know, Habib believes in exhibitions. I think if he's going to fight somebody, he's going to fight him. And I also can't see Habib doing this and being like, yes, I'll box you and I won't get you in an MMA fight. I don't think Habib would be comfortable losing and not being able to get his retribution in an MMA match where he can completely destroy Floyd. It's possible, yeah, though. I mean, it's possible, but he just doesn't strike me as a man who's driven by money. We've never, ever, ever, ever heard Habib talk about money. Ever.
No. I mean, I'm sure he has enough. Like, yeah. Again, I don't know how deep, you know, a dollar transitions in Russia, but I think it probably goes so far away. I've seen Euro Trip a lot where they like have 65 cents and are treated like kings. So I think it'll be right. And I think he's like really good friends with Putin. It's weird. He'll be fine. He's taken care of. So let's hit the break. When we come back, we got to see where Habib ranks now in the grand scheme of MMA history. Is he the number one fighter of all time? Should he be number one pound for pound right now, like he called for before he left the octagon? So you guys stay right there. We'll be right back after this break. We'll get right back to the show in a second, but first, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be able to be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to teams, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day.
Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, it's the home stretch, and we are back. And now it's time to talk about the legacy of Khabib Nurmagomedov. So before, you know, he left the octagon, he was doing his post-fight interview, and he said the one thing he wants, Dana, UFC, put me number one pound for pound in the rankings. The problem with that is that there's a man sitting at number one, and his name is John Jones. And if we're keeping it a buck and we start comparing records and resumes, it's not close.
You sure about that?
I'm positive about
that. I'm not.
John has 4 or 5 Hall of Famers on his record that he has beat.
When did he fight him?
Would you consider Rashad washed when he fought him?
No.
Glover?
Glover's not a Hall of Famer.
Okay. That's better than a lot of Khabib's victories. Mm. Michael Johnson.
Here's the thing.
No, DC twice. DC twice is better than everyone on Khabib.
DC twice is great. But Khabib is the number one pound for pound fighter right now. Period. I don't even think. No, it's not
Why
tough.
Why does John drop? Why?
Because John struggled in his last two fights with Dominic Reyes and Thiago Santos.
So struggling is enough to get you to drop from one?
Yes, when a man doesn't lose a round, yes. Yes. Habib has never had a split decision in his career. Never.
I don't know why. Then he should have been at number one already.
No, because he just beat the most dangerous. He just beat Justin Gaethje, who beat the man who holds the record for the longest winning streak in lightweight history. And Justin Gaethje murked him, and Khabib ran right through him.
I give you, Khabib's last three fights are incredible. Poirier, Connor, Gaethje, all submitted.
And didn't have a hard time with any of them.
Nope, hell of a run.
Connor,
credit to Connor. Connor gave him the toughest fight out of anyone, maybe outside of Ally and Quinta, which is a complete anomaly. But Connor gave him like the toughest fight out of anyone. It shows how good Connor is. But even then, wasn't really a fight.
No.
For Khabib. Like, he got pieced up a little bit. It was like, like you said, okay, I'm done playing your game.
Yes.
Now it's time to end this.
Pound for pound is a what have you done for me lately list. And
that is tough.
And Khabib, right now, what he has done with his last three fights compared to what John has done in his last three fights, Khabib is number one pound for pound. Right now.
That's so tough.
It's not tough.
John's record.
It's not tough.
I got to pull up who John has beat lately.
Dude, it's not tough. Is Thiago Santos a Hall of Famer? Thiago Santos is the Michael Johnson of light heavyweights. And okay. Thiago Santos gave John a hard time.
John definitely played conservative in that fight.
Doesn't matter what he played. When you're talking about pound for pound, you have to split these guys by some metric. And that metric is, what have you done for me lately and how dominant have you looked? Nobody's looked more dominant than Khabib. Nobody. And
TKO Gus.
And
TKO DC.
Wait.
Unanimous decision over DC.
I'm giving you one more thing.
Come on.
And lightweight division is the toughest division in MMA. Light heavyweight is not.
All right. If you are, what have you done for me lately, I can understand it.
Furthermore, I'll give you one more thing. What even hurts John's case even more at this very moment is that Dominic Reyes got knocked out by Jan Blachowicz.
Yeah, that doesn't help much. John wrecks Jan Blachowicz too.
Does he? I mean, the thing is, does he? I don't think John loses to necessarily anybody right now. But John's last couple of performances have been lackluster. In John's credentials. Like what John's
has been. Yes, something has been off. I think the biggest argument for not having John Jones at number one is the failed test. And if you look at his lackluster performances, you look and you have to wonder, is this John when he's completely off of everything?
It's possible. Right? It's possible.
Like, he's still good enough to beat everyone, but it's real close now.
Yeah, like, it's very possible. I'm just looking at what Khabib has done in his last three fights. Because, listen, let's not treat Conor like he's some kind of scrub.
No, Conor's amazing.
Like, Conor at one point was 1-8 for pound for pound because he was the first man to hold two titles simultaneously. Yeah. And he doused the man who was considered one of the greatest featherweight, well, not even considered, who was the greatest featherweight of all time, knocked him out in a matter of seconds.
Yeah. Full camp, I don't think anyone at lightweight, maybe three people at welterweight, fuck with Conor right now.
I don't know.
Full camp, not last minute, you know, going fight Nick Diaz, blowing up last second. No. All the way through, Conor, especially at lightweight, no one's fucking with
him. I don't know. I think Gaethje exactly. gives him a hard fucking time.
Hard fight. I think Conor might starch him in two.
I don't think so.
That punch is really fucking hard. Yeah. But, and Gaethje goes down.
But Gaethje,
I mean, it'd be a war.
Gaethje being patient and Conor being heavy on his front leg makes that fight interesting.
Very interesting. Said the same thing about Aldo, who had the best leg kicks we have ever seen.
Aldo was completely Aldo was completely but see, that's when
I'm saying it's possible.
What I'm saying, like the Aldo fight, here's the thing. Conor shocked the world with the Aldo fight. Nobody's falling for that trap again. Like between that and Eddie Alvarez ass kicking,
tell that to Donald Cerrone.
Donald Cerrone's washed, man. Come on. That's that don't
I'm just
count.
Saying, you said no one's falling for the trap.
That wasn't a trap. Donald Cerrone was just outclassed. If you are like, I'm curious how well Conor does against Poirier. Right, I think he wins, but I'm curious how he does. Gaethje, I think, is a extremely tough fight for Conor.
Agreed. I think Gaethje should fight Chandler next.
Well, we should do this real quick. What should they do with a lightweight title?
I'm so you're lucky you got off of that John Jones thing.
No, I'm getting back to it. Don't worry. Don't worry. I'm getting back to it.
But with the lightweight title, I think immediately, just because it also makes business sense. Conor Poirier is for the lightweight.
Absolutely not. Absolutely fucking not.
You're not pulling off a tournament.
Not you. Why? You have to do something. That should not be for the title.
The winner of
that should not be for the title.
And then you have. Then I would put Chandler versus Gaethje. Winner of that would fight the winner of this. And then Tony Ferguson, you kind of got to be the odd man out. You have to then fight like Alex Oliveira. Just get back on your fucking feet for a second. And then, you know, you work your way right back into the title picture.
I don't think Conor versus Poirier for the title is stupid.
Business sense? Not stupid.
Business sense?
And
sure.
I wouldn't be shocked.
I wouldn't be shocked either. But I'm saying in the sense that why should Poirier and Conor be for the title?
Because Poirier already has a win over Justin Gaethje. One. Right there. Michael Chandler just got here. Two. Both of them are eliminated because of that. Because Gaethje, either is Gaethje Poirier running it back for the title, or Poirier's in there because he beat Justin Gaethje and knocked him out.
How long ago
now,
was that?
Now, regardless.
It's not regardless.
He won. And then they both went on runs since. He hasn't lost since, except to Khabib.
They both lost
Gaethje
to Khabib.
Gaethje hasn't lost since to Khabib.
All three of them lost to Khabib, right?
All right. So then when you go back, you look at, okay, they fought each other before they went on these runs. Who won that fight? Poirier won. So Poirier deserves the shot. Off rip above Gaethje.
So why does Conor deserve it?
Conor deserves it because he's money. That's it.
That's
it's Conor motherfucking McGregor.
It's whack. It should
and
be,
the fight is already booked.
It should be a tournament. They should not crown a title this quick.
It's not Bellator. It's not World Series of Fighting.
There should still
be
a tournament.
You have a matchup on the books that's a big money, big pay-per-view fight. You do that for the belt.
Nothing.
And then you say, you know what? If everything else is supposed to shake out how it is, it's going to be title fights anyway. What does it matter if this is the semifinals of a four-person tournament, but you give the belt to the winner of one semifinal, they still got to fight the winner of the other semi. So if it's going to shake down like that anyway, then Gaethje or Chandler just going to take the belt off of him anyway. So what?
Because
it changes nothing except it makes you more money. And you get more eyes to see
makes
Conor.
Makes who more so money?
Conor as champion makes you more money.
No, it doesn't.
You give him the opportunity.
Do you think Conor makes more money if he's got a title? Do you think that matters?
I think it matters, especially if someone beats Conor, yes.
What's Conor's best-selling pay-per-view?
Nate Diaz. No, Khabib.
Khabib. But before that was Nate Diaz, right? What title was on the line?
None on that
okay.
one.
Okay. I'm just saying it doesn't matter. Conor could fight for...
To be fair, it was supposed to be.
I'm just saying, Conor could fight for a bowl of candy, and people will pay top dollar.
I understand that. But for his opponent, it does matter. If Poirier wins and Poirier becomes champion, beating Conor, having the belt does help a little bit when he then goes to defend the belt after beating Connor.
Yeah, I think here's why I think it should be a tournament. I think because everybody lost to Gaethje. I mean, to Khabib. Everybody lost.
So what happens when someone gets injured? You put this tournament
there.
This
is why there's five people in this tournament, right?
Oh, now you have alternates.
No, this is really simple. Listen, you already got Poirier and Connor booked. And you probably can easily book Chandler versus Ferguson. Yes, Gaethje just fought Khabib, but he's the last person to lose. He's the alternate. It's really simple. Because here's the other issue. If Connor gets his hands on that title, there's no guarantee you'll ever see him fight again.
That's very true. You have an interim champ in 2 seconds because he's going to fight Manny.
Yeah, that's why I don't think you should put the title on Connor, because Connor has other aspirations. And if you do that, you tie up the entire division, because there is no guarantee that Connor wins and he defends that title anytime in 2021.
Got to break bread.
Connor will not make as much
money. Connor might fuck around and win that tournament anyway. You'll be in the same predicament.
But at least you got two fights out of him. That's what I'm saying. At least you got two fights out of him. And if you don't, you just put Gaethje in there.
Yo, Connor wins one semi and be like, yo, I'm not fighting. You'd be like, fuck it, just Gaethje.
Yeah, because if Connor beats Poirier, right, and you book Chandler versus Ferguson you could book that for January or February, right? You could book it right after that fight in another pay-per-view. And then you have the two winners. Let's just say Connor wins. Let's say Chandler wins. Let's just say that's what it is. Gaethje, unfortunately, is the odd man out, but he's alternate. Because the fact of the matter is, Connor wins, and Connor looks around and he goes, oi, the Pacquiao fight. And then Dana's like, if you take that fight, you're out of this shit. And Connor's going to take the fight, because he's a money fighter. He don't fight for fucking titles. He fights for the money. And then you say, okay, fine, Gaethje versus Chandler.
Then you lose Connor anyway. So, again, if Connor wins the belt, and then you end up, Connor's like, yo, I'm going to fight Pacquiao. Either you make Gaethje versus the winner of Chandler and Ferguson the interim title.
No.
You strip them and you just have them fight. No. You strip Connor and have them fight for the belt. You don't lose anything in my scenario.
You do, because you hold the title for hostage again. Because what happens
you
is.
You just strip him.
You're not going to strip him immediately, because Connor's going to play you. You give Connor too much power if you give him that title. The entire scenario that Dana just created, putting Connor in January instead of December, was to show who's got power. If you give Connor the opportunity to win a title, you put the power right back in his hands. And that's the last thing you want to do if you're Dana White. Now he controls your division all over again. Because he'll say, yeah, I'm going to fight.
It's tough.
Because Connor's going to say, yeah, I'll fight. Yeah, I'll fight. Sure. Yeah, I'll fight. Yeah, I'll fight. Oh, how much you going to pay me? Oh, that's not much. Okay, 3 months pass. 4 months pass. 5 months pass. The rest of the division is like, what the fuck? And then Connor doesn't fight. You just held up the entire division and you allow Connor to do it again. Because he can.
Listen, he's big money. You toss the belt towards big money.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Because you want a Bellator-esque.
Yes, I want a tournament. I want, because everybody that lost to Khabib, you can't just immediately give one of them the title. They have to earn it. I think you have to win at least two fights.
Because Connor's earned all of his titles. Sure.
I mean, sure. Connor did earn the featherweight title. Did he not?
No, I believe he just decided he wanted to. Yeah, I mean, featherweight. But he decided he wanted to become lightweight champ.
Who was there?
Going to fight the lightweight champ. RDA, then he lost, and he came back.
Exactly.
And he beat Nate Diaz and went straight into the main title
pitch. But it wasn't as competitive. It's a lot easier. Like, the lightweight division now is a lot more competitive when Conor beat Eddie Alvarez. Okay. Any of those guys could be champion. And then there's Chandler.
I mean, Tony was still on his winning streak.
Yeah,
Tony,
but he was hurt all the time. Remember? So they could never book
so
the Khabib. They could never book the Khabib fight. So it was a clear path for Conor to get the title. Now you have to jump over somebody to get the title. Because all those guys deserve it, but they're also all the...
Not sure Michael Chandler deserves it.
What?
You're stretching it with that one. He just got here.
But he deserves an opportunity because he's been screaming about being one of the best in the world. That's why he should be in the tournament. If he can't...
Then let him fight a top five person.
That is a top five person. Door. That's what I'm saying. He's in the tournament. That's exactly what I'm saying. He fights somebody to prove that he deserves a title shot, but you have to win. So if you fight Tony Ferguson, you beat Tony Ferguson, then you get the title shot. If you lose,
I don't know what's wrong with giving Conor the belt if he doesn't.
I just told you that you give him too much power.
I give one of those fucking plasticky interim belts
again. I just told you don't want to do that again. You just had this whole issue with Conor. That's the reason why Khabib got the title the first time, and the whole mix up, and the reason why Conor threw a dolly through a bus is because you took the title from him. You're gonna do this all over again?
Yes, it gave you the biggest pay-per-view in the history of your company.
But do you understand?
My answer is yes.
Do you think that Dana wants to do that? Or does Dana?
Yes, no, he doesn't. He wants money.
Dana gets the money anyway. Conor fights get money. You don't have to put a title on him to do it. Dana's controlling the narrative right now. He's telling Conor, because there's no guarantee that Conor's still fighting Poirier. That hasn't even been formally announced yet.
Yeah, no guarantee yet.
So if you say it's for the title, then Conor's like, yeah, now I'm going to sign on. You don't give him that kind of power. But again, this is from the scenario of Dana White. If this is the scenario of Conor McGregor, it's like he should leverage his marketing power and his strength and everything else. But Dana likes to have control. And the only way to have control is to control when and where Conor fights and what it's for. You don't let Conor call that shot.
I think in the end, it's a give and take. And Dana does like try to flex on Conor. I think at the end of the day, Conor has the power.
He doesn't.
To a degree.
He does not. Like, he just showed it. Dana's not letting him fight in December.
It's fucking dumb.
It is dumb, but that's what he did.
Yeah. I mean, again, you got to pick your battles. Dana, you know, stood on that and smart stand. If the next stand is for the belt, I mean, listen, the belts mean a little more than boxing, but a little. Like, there's interim belts all the fucking time. So
they mean a lot more than boxing. There's only one champion.
Okay. There's interim belts all the time, though. Like, you can strip someone. Or someone can disappear.
Is there a UFC super heavyweight champion and a regular?
I'll give you that. Listen, I'm not fighting that one. You're right.
Is Conor the franchise champion now? Is that what we're doing?
He's the franchise champ. Give Conor the franchise belt. That cannot be passed on. Yeah. You're the franchise champ forever, Conor. All right. So, by the way, John Jones, if we're looking totality, Rampage, it's Shogun Hua. I'll go before that. Ryan Bader beat by submission. Shogun Hua, TKO, Rampage Jackson, submission. Submission, Machida, decision versus Rashad Evans, submission, TRT, Belfort, TKO, Chael Sonnen. Come on. And then the greatest fight in light heavyweight history, Gustafson. Wild run.
Is it?
Yes. That run is crazy.
It's a pretty good run, right?
And he followed it up with Glover and DC. It's win and win.
It's a pretty good run, right? Yeah, I agree.
Shit's an incredible run.
Yeah.
Khabib doesn't have that. Khabib doesn't have that. That run is crazy.
Here, again, I've given you the argument. Now, let's talk about it. We're talking about where does Khabib sit on the greatest fighters of all time? Where do you have him?
All time, again, we've talked about this. GSP was fringe top five for me.
Which is nuts.
Personal. I think he's ahead of GSP.
He is ahead of GSP.
So, if you give me John at number one, you give me John, Silva, Fedor, then we put, yeah, and then I'll put in Khabib because he's above GSP, he's above Mighty Mouse. I finagle him right in there. Four?
I can make an argument that Khabib is the greatest fighter of all time right now.
Without using drugs?
Yes. Like, Khabib, okay. Here's the thing. Conor, John Jones still can make his case as the greatest fighter of all time.
Yes.
He's still here, and he can still do it. But at this...
My thing, he has to hurt his case to drop more so than he has to make a case.
Well, here's the thing. The guys that you just mentioned, is Gustafson a Hall of Famer? No.
Hall of Fame fight, though. So
Hall of Fame fight, but not a Hall of Famer.
If we're splitting hairs, yes, he will be in the Hall of Fame. But it will be for that fight. Mm. But that's only because that's how they do it.
And John continue. Struggled in that fight, right? Struggled.
Oh, he did. Yes, he did. I mean, he also knocked the guy out in a rematch. But yeah, sure.
Yeah. But Gustafson was never like world class. Like, no, like when that fight happened, none of us said, oh, this is a tough fight for John. It ended up being tough. John has put himself in a position outside of the Cormier fights where, especially recently with Thiago Santos, Dominic Reyes, the first Gustafson fight, nearly getting armbar by Vitor Belfort.
Nearly, that shit don't count.
I'm just, here's what I'm saying. John has been dominant, and he should be number one pound for pound. But if you want to make an argument for Khabib, the argument goes as follows. Man doesn't lose. He's lost two rounds in his career.
That's a great, great statistic.
The man has fought the guys who we said were tough and ran right through them. The guys he was supposed to beat, he ran through them as well. Khabib has done what he's supposed to do, and he's retiring at 29-0. Never been stopped. And that's where I put him ahead of GSP. GSP losing to Matt Serra hurts his case against somebody like Khabib.
Yes.
Khabib never got stopped, never got rocked. The other thing is, when you look at Khabib's body of work, it is like, yeah, okay, you talk about Michael Johnson, but everybody has one of those fights. Like, it's not like John Jones. Like the Rampage fight, come on, man. Chael Sonnen, come on, man.
All right, so not until his 22nd fight would I say he fought someone in the upper echelon of opponents. 22nd fight was RDA.
Trucked him.
2014. Trucked him. Then he fought Darrell Horcher, whatever. Michael Johnson, not upper echelon, but beat him by submission. Edson Barboza, quality
win. Absolutely murdered Edson Barboza.
Yeah, that's a quality win, right?
Yeah.
2017. Then we go Ali Aquinta, late notice, not a quality win. Connor Dustin Gaethje in a row.
Mauled.
Five quality wins, with Barboza and RDA being two of them. And those guys were, RDA was a champion. Barboza is a top five guy. John Jones has four to five Hall of Famers on his resume. Khabib has five quality wins. The other guys are Pat Healy, Abel Trujillo, Diego Tavares, Gleison Tebow, and a bunch of people in Pro FC in Russia. So what are we talking about here? Five quality wins his entire career, compared to Ryan Bader was just a champ.
Yeah, but
in Bellator.
So wait.
And Bader was undefeated.
Wait. We're gonna talk about Ryan Bader, who lost to Tito Ortiz shortly after that. That's what we're talking about.
Undefeated going into that fight, right?
Wait, we're talking about Ryan Bader, who lost to Tito Ortiz.
Yes, bad loss. Went on to become a champ in a different promotion.
In Bellator.
That is highly respected.
Yeah, Pat Healy did some things in Strikeforce, but we're not talking about that.
I'm letting you know.
But here's what we're talking about. Here's what we're talking about.
Yes.
John Jones.
Shogun Hall of Famer.
Wait. When John Jones won the title, right, he correct. Beat Shogun, which was incredibly impressive. Yep. Quentin Rampage Jackson was not a guy that a lot of people thought was like, whatever. Light heavyweight has not been a strong division, right? Chael Sonnen and Alexander Gustafson were two guys who were just like, He beat Chael, duh, he was supposed to. Gus, he struggled mightily with. Then he beat Teixeira. Then he beat Cormier. Then he fought St. Preux. Didn't look that great against St. Preux. Now, here's my thing when we talk about Khabib. It ain't just who you beat. It's how you beat him.
But if you're only fighting five quality guys, granted, his best performances might have been against the three best fighters he's ever fought, which is ridiculous.
Because
he was still getting better at the end, which is bonkers. But he decided to call it short. When he called it short, it's my argument. I think Barry Sanders is the greatest running back of all time. But what the hell am I supposed to say to people when they say it's Walter Payton or Emmitt Smith? Barry called it quits too early to give me a real leg to stand on. He was still in his prime. Khabib is still in his prime, so he leaves the door open for John Jones, the Emmitt Smith of this shit.
Yeah, but that's also a team game, and a lot of us have always said that Emmitt Smith was running behind one of the greatest offensive lines of all time, and Barry Sanders did it with nothing, right?
Exactly, but you see the flash, the ease. You can tell who did it somewhat better with your eyes, so you give Barry the credit.
Exactly. Like you give Khabib. And this is my point with Khabib.
In the grand, yeah, but you look at it, and on paper, it says it's Jon.
All I'm saying is there is a legitimate argument to say Khabib is the greatest fighter of all time. Jon Jones.
Is he? In your opinion, is he? I understand. Yes, there's an argument.
Right now, yes. Is he? At this very moment, yes. If Jon captures the heavyweight title, no. That's really it. Jon right now, the like his this back half of his career is really strange. Because you know what else hurts? Cocaine.
Cocaine is one hell of a drug.
Failing the drug test is going to hurt.
Does. Everyone else on my list ahead of him. Outside of Fedor.
And it's hard. And here's the problem with Fedor. Fedor had one of the greatest heavyweight runs of all time.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Got.
But him and Anderson Silva, the back third of their career, sucked. Rough. That's where when you're splitting hairs in these arguments, it's like, well, this is where when you fought too long, it actually hurts your case. It's the Roy Jones shit.
Because if they get out, like we both always say, if Roy Jones gets out right after he wins the heavyweight title, he has a case for greatest of all time.
And the people can, you can have that argument, and you're comfortable making that argument.
But he kept fighting.
Yes, and it hurts him.
And a lot of these guys did.
Yes.
If Anderson, you know, if Anderson gets out, right, what was before Weidman? Chael fight?
Yeah, if he beats Chael and who'd he beat?
He went up to heavy, or to light heavy.
See, and the crazy, and here's the crazy thing. Like, as much as we talk about Anderson Silva, when you talk about bodies on a resume, you really look at Anderson Silva's resume, how many Hall, like, outside of Dan Henderson.
It's shaky.
Think, I mean, look at it.
I got
Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner, James Irwin.
Oh yeah,
it's
looking shaky in the light.
But the thing about Anderson is, it was never just who he beat, how he beat them. And Khabib has always been about, he's just not out here just beating guys. He's destroying them and talking to them the entire time.
Yeah. I mean, he's the greatest grappler in MMA. Oh,
that's unquestioned. The man wrestles bears. You can't beat that.
Yeah, like, that's... He has arguably the best set of specific skills.
Yeah, like, he's... Khabib has proven to be unstoppable. Where Jon still has a chance to make a case. And that's why... This is why I continue to say right now. Because if Jon retired tomorrow, would you really feel comfortable with it? The Dominic Reyes victory?
Yeah. I mean... Yes, that run, that early run, the names on the list, yeah, I would feel very comfortable saying Jon Jones the greatest of all time. Khabib has great wins. That Conor win is really good.
I mean, Gaethje
had lost before. He got stopped by Poirier. It's still a very good win.
And he just ran them both over.
Poirier. Yeah, very good. Poirier, you know, lost to Conor. It's like a round robin of those guys beating each other. And then, but you beat all three. So, yeah, you beat three really good fighters. Are any of them Daniel Cormier in my book? No, he beat Cormier twice.
He beat Cormier once.
He beat him twice. We were there both times, Dre.
I mean, I'm just saying. Reggie Bush
won a Heisman.
He failed a drug test.
USC,
I didn't make the rules.
Won a national championship, sir. I saw it with my eyes.
I didn't make the rules.
DC got his head kicked off.
I didn't make the rules. Jon Jones, is that fight a win?
I don't count that bullshit elbow either.
Is that fight a win on Jon Jones' record? I'm just asking.
No, it's now a no contest. Mm. I saw him win.
Hey, I'm just saying. If you want to make the argument, I'm just saying, you want to make the argument against Jon Jones, you say, I don't know what he was taking in that fight because he failed a drug test.
Because, yes, only Jon Jones stops. Jon Jones is the only one stopped.
Exactly. And that's what.
If we're making comparisons, Jon Jones, to me, at the end of the day, might be Barry Bonds, where the only thing against him being the greatest ever was self-induced.
Yes, I believe that 100%.
And that's me with Barry Bonds.
And
like you would have been the greatest ever anyway.
Right.
But you did this and kind of fucked yourself up.
So with the last thing I'll say about this is with Jon, like I can go the other way and make this very argument that you're making that Jon's the greatest fighter of all time. But I hate it because it's a what have you done for me lately thing, and I'm going to end with this. Jon has no contest. We'll actually go with this. Jon was out of the octagon because he wanted to drive a fast car, hit pregnant women with cars, and have hot Cheetos and Funyuns and cocaine.
Condoms.
Right? And condoms. Yeah. So then he comes back. He fights Ovince St. Preux. Doesn't look great. But he wins. But it's Ovince St. Preux, dude.
Yeah.
Then he fights Cormier, who we see him knock out, but then he tests positive for drugs. That's not good.
Yeah. Dick pills, sir. Dick pills.
Yes, whatever. Then he fights Gustafsson and beats Gustafsson. But clearly Gus is not the same Gus that he fought in the first fight, because Gus got mauled by Anthony Johnson, and then I think Gus lost directly after that.
DC.
Yeah. Which
was a good fight.
Then he fights Anthony Smith, who's in nobody's Hall of Fame. And he wins the fight, but he doesn't finish it. Then he fights Thiago Santos and wins a split decision against a middleweight. Then he fights...
On one leg, because he tore his shit.
Then he fights Dominic Reyes in a fight that a lot of people picked Reyes to win, and John has kind of escaped that fight. Now, if John's career ends off of this versus how Khabib's career just ended, I can make the case for Khabib right now. What John has to do now is make this venture up to heavyweight, because there's really nothing left for him to do at light heavyweight, and win the title. Even if he, you know what? He doesn't even have to win the title. If John went in there and fought Francis Ngannou and tore his ass up, I'd be like, all right, never mind. But
it's crazy that he still has to prove more.
When somebody like Khabib retires the way that he did, and John is going the way that he's been going the last five fights.
Listen, man, some people go out like Elway. You know, some people don't. Jordan went out on the Wizards. What are we talking about here?
I mean, what are we talking about here?
Like, he's still the greatest, right? Like, he went out on the Wizards. People don't mention that shit. They mention the run that counts. So if I'm mentioning John's run that counts, yeah, these last two fights are ugly, but if you hung it up today, we're not talking about John on the Wizards.
But I'm just saying, you're now up against a guy who has never lost a fight, has lost two rounds in his entire career, and ended his career fighting three of the best lightweights that we can consider at the time in the toughest division, and ransacked all three of them. That's when it gets dicey for John Jones. Without Khabib retiring, John has claim to this title. But with Khabib walking out and saying, look, I have nothing else to prove. I've given you everything. Here's my resume. What do you think?
You know what this argument sounds a lot like to me? Your case for Ice Cube if he stopped in 93 being the greatest rapper of all time.
Yeah.
This is Khabib saying, I'm stopping.
Yeah, he's doing it. Like, he is.
This is him doing
it. You know what he's doing? You know what he's actually doing?
He's Biggie.
He's Biggie Smalls in this shit.
He's Biggie. He never will have the chance to fall off. John Jones has the chance to become Jay-Z. He has the chance to put out a Kingdom Come and fuck stuff up a little
bit. Yeah, he does. But we shall see. But if you're asking me right now, I can make a case for Khabib.
Thiago Santos was his Kingdom Come.
He should, like, come on, man. Like, that fight should have never happened. Like, he should have destroyed Thiago Santos.
That's John Jones' Kingdom Come.
Yeah.
He's Jay. And if you want to say Khabib's Biggie, then I say Jay is the greatest of all time. So that's how I end up with Jones.
Yeah, and if you want to be, you know, real clear about this, the Anthony Smith win is kind of shaky, too, because what happened to Smith? He got mugged by Glover Teixeira.
But I mean, there's a case to people not being the same after you fight them that you really can't hold against.
I mean,
people as well.
You can, but it's Anthony Smith, man. Anthony Smith wasn't a world beater when he got that title fight. The division sucks.
Yeah, he was on a run though. There's a case to be that they fought me and then fell the fuck off. That's more a kudos to me. I took their soul.
I don't think John took Dominic Reyes' soul at all.
I don't know, until he just got blitzed.
I'm just saying. Dominic.
I think a lot of it comes to a lot of these fighters, and, you know, I can't say this for certain, but I'm just speculating, is, like, you look at Anthony Smith, you look at Dominic Reyes, a lot of these fighters saw John Jones from early, right? You know you're in this division. You train all this time to get to John. It's the coup de grace of your career. You do get close. You fight him. You feel that. You think you might win in Reyes' case and all this stuff. And then you lose. But you spent all this time just to get to John. So then there's this emotional dump and drop off after it. And not that you're physically different, like he beat the shit out of you, but you've reached your goal. And then now you're fighting for a different reason. And you don't have that same edge.
That's cool. I get it. But then, you know, with Khabib, you look at Khabib and it's like, I'm not going to get taken down. And then he goes out there and murders you.
He's utterly dominant. Like, he has the best one trick I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's something that's unsolvable. Like, his wrestling skill, if this shit was Madden, is 150. Like, it's unstoppable. His wrestling, to the point of the best strikers, Gaethje was an all-American wrestler.
Yeah.
Looked like he had no business being on the ground with this man. It's unstoppable. I mean, the only way you remotely test his wrestling, and it's not even possible, but if you had like Triple C, Henry Cejudo, if he was like 20 pounds bigger, you'd be like, let's see what the fuck happens. But he's not. But I think he still mauls Henry Cejudo.
He does, because it's not just the wrestling, it's the grappling.
The guy's Olympia. It's the grappling. It's a whole different thing. It's fucking crazy. So I don't, that's what made him and GSP so intriguing.
Yep.
Is that, could he maul GSP like that on the ground? I think he could.
Probably.
Yeah, it's crazy. But all right, that's our show. We want to hear from you guys. Where do you think Khabib stands in the pantheon of MMA? Is he number one? Is he in your top five? How does this end with him? Where do you rank him? Hit us up on Twitter. We want to thank you guys for listening to our show. Make sure you check out our other two shows this week. Our pro wrestling show where we recap Hell in a Cell. And our boxing show where we preview a weekend of huge boxing, including Gervonta Davis versus Leo Santa Cruz on pay-per-view. If you guys want to follow us on social media, the show is at @cornerpodcast_ on Twitter. At Corner Club for Life on Instagram. You can follow me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale on all platforms. Shout out to the sponsor. Shout out to Blue Wire, the network. Always appreciated. You guys stay safe. Stay Rona free. Make sure you guys check us out this weekend as well. It feels great to be back to three shows. But for right now, we're out.
Peace.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.